This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Today, I'm delighted to have in the studio with me Dr. Helen Caldicott, perhaps the greatest anti-nuclear activist since Linus Pauling. She's the founder of Physicians for Social Responsibility and Women's Action for Nuclear Disarmament. She does a weekly Pacifica radio show all her own called If You Love This Planet, which happens to be the title of a book that came out, a decade ago and then was revised in the last couple of years. Helen Caldicott, welcome to Progressive Radio.
Thank you, Matthew.
Real honor to meet you. We've published you in The Progressive before. I've been reading you for years and years and following your activism on this all-important nuclear issue. What brings you to the U.S. this time around?
Well, I've been on a seven-week speaking tour. I started in Freiburg, Germany, where environmental laureates came from 46 countries to discuss really global warming and how dire the situation is and to prepare for the Rio Plus 20 conference. And then I came to Seattle, then LA, then Santa Barbara, then Indiana, then Philadelphia. I've been all over the country and I'm a little bit tired because it's the last few days and I get on the plane on Sunday to fly back to Australia. Thank God.
Well, I hope to keep you awake here for the next 28 minutes. I'm sorry, they're running you ragged. How dire is the global warming situation?
Oh, extremely dire. It's moving faster than anyone predicted. The chairman of the IPCC was at this conference, International Panel on Climate Change, Sir John Watson, I think his name is. The predictions are now that it will be 3 degrees centigrade hotter by the middle of the century and 6 degrees hotter by the end of the century, which is antithetical to life. We can't survive that. And we're reaching a tipping point now because the Arctic's melting, and as that happens, so the permafrost is melting, which contains millions of tons of CO2 and millions of tons of methane, which is 20 times more potent as a global warmer than CO2. So once that actually occurs, and it's starting to occur now, it will be irreversible, and our children will have no future.
I mean, it's amazing, isn't it, just how ostrich-like we are here in the United States on this issue of global warming. Even in Madison, Wisconsin, in March of 2012, we had 5 days where the temperature hit 80 or more. Now, the temperature hadn't hit 80 or more only five times in the last 100 years, and it hit five times in that 1 month in March. And it was warm all over the country. So maybe people, the latest study I saw, people in the U.S. are beginning to, by a majority, finally recognizing man's contribution to global warming, but it's an uphill battle here with so many know-nothings. How do you explain that?
Well, you're all brainwashed, aren't you? You watch the television, you know, you watch Fox, you are brainwashed by the corporations. It's called the manufacture of consent. People drive their children to ballet in tanks doing 5 miles a gallon. All SUVs should be banned. I mean, I see no evidence in this country that you are doing anything about global warming, and it really scares the bejesus out of me. When I wrote that book, If You Love This Planet, in 91, all the predictions were there that were going to happen, and they have all come about. I can't understand how people are so blind, so psychically numbed, and then when we get these crazy temperature elevations and wild storms and the like, people aren't even saying, well, I think it might be global warming. The politicians are scientifically literate. They're corporate prostitutes, almost every single one of them, including Obama, except maybe for Bernie Sanders in Vermont. They all take money from the corporations that are causing global warming. And now the Arctic's melting. I read that there's 30% of the world's natural gas in the Arctic. So guess what? They're going to go up and get it, and a lot of oil. And now the Pentagon is going up there with its ships, and all the countries around the Arctic are going to fight each other for this. I mean, these people are idiots, number one. Number two, that it's like, you know, they are going to get the oil out to produce more global warming, which melted the Arctic ice in the first place, so it's pouring petrol on the global fire. I mean, where are their brains? Don't they care about the future for their children, let alone all species on the planet?
I'm speaking with Helen Caldicott. I'm Matt Rothschild. You're listening to Progressive Radio. They just want to get the oil and the natural gas there now that the water is, or now that the ice is breaking up for their short-term quarterly profits.
They're
That's
idiots.
The amazing thing.
I mean, they're idiots. I mean, and I'm talking now as a physician making a psychiatric diagnosis.
It's a clinical diagnosis. You mentioned Obama. Talk a little bit about his record as regards global warming.
Well, he's not done anything, has he? Hasn't got a record. He's pro-nuclear power because he gets a lot of money from Exelon. He got $250,000 for his initial campaign. They have 13 reactors around Chicago, and they're very near you. If one of those melts down, you know, you might all die of acute radiation illness with your hair falling out, vomiting and bleeding to death. No one talks about that. I need half an hour with Obama.
What would you say?
Well, he's a highly intelligent man. He's a lawyer, so he knows no biology and no medicine, but he's got two little girls who he adores. I'm a pediatrician. I would talk to him about the medical impacts of nuclear power, that children are very vulnerable to the effects of radiation. Children under the age of five living near reactors have a double, more than double incidence of leukemia and high rate of cancer because nuclear power plants routinely emit radioactive elements. I would teach him. He's teachable. I actually met with Reagan for an hour and a quarter in the White House alone, and it was a bit difficult because he didn't know anything, and I'd just written my book, Missile Envy, so I was full of facts and figures. And we argued, and he'd get quite uptight. And remember when he did, he'd get a red flush on his cheek, so I would hold his hand to reassure him and settle him down. And I established a doctor-patient relationship with him, and I estimated his clinically IQ was about 100. And I also diagnosed his impending Alzheimer's.
What year was that?
It was 82.
So this was before he had the awakening with Gorbachev.
Well, see, and I thought, I went back to the hotel. It was at the Hilton, and you know, low lights and guys drinking at the bar and stuff. And I felt like running up, saying, "Do you know what I've just seen?" I mean, it was unbelievable. It was like pulling the curtain on the Wizard of Oz. And but then he started to say, "Nuclear war must never be fought and can never be won." And I think, retrospectively, I did influence him. And then he started to work with Gorbachev. And over a weekend in Reykjavik in Iceland, they almost agreed to abolish nuclear weapons. So it's a precedent to abolish weapons. And of the 23,000 H-bombs in the world today, Russia and America own 97%, and they have the gall to talk about other countries. It's only Russia and America who can blow up the planet tonight. People are hacking into the early warning system in the Pentagon every day. I don't know how we're still here.
Well, there have been a lot of close calls, haven't there?
Very many close calls, and they continue. And, you know, it's the elephant in the sitting room that no one talks about. I mean, it's amazing. Everyone's practicing collective suicide, rushing like lemmings to the cliff. And, you know, we hospitalize suicidal patients. They're a danger to themselves and other people. America's in a suicidal state. That's clinically sick.
You could hospitalize the leadership class.
I'd love to. I wish I could be president. Boy, you could fix it in a flash.
I'm speaking with Dr. Helen Caldicott, anti-nuclear activist, pediatrician, founder of Physicians for Social Responsibility. I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of The Progressive. You're listening to Progressive Radio. It is amazing now, more than a decade after the fall of the Soviet Union, 13, 14 years after, that nuclear weapons are still, you, United States and Russia still have nuclear weapons on hair trigger alert.
There are 40 H-bombs targeted on New York as I speak, and Robert McNamara and I wrote an article about that for the LA Times, 60 on DC. And yet they talk about terrorists, and we have to practically undress in the airports. I mean, the real terrorists holding the world at nuclear ransom are Russia and America, and they're best friends. There's no, absolutely no reason why our lives should be threatened every second of every day by the sword of Damocles hanging by a silken thread spinning above our heads.
But that seems so obvious. Why are they still on hair trigger alert?
Well, I think there's some psychological deficit in the reptilian midbrain of some of the men's minds in the Pentagon, whose minds have a toxic reaction to testosterone. I think they see these weapons as a, you know, maybe as a cure for their abnormal erections or something. You know, they're always advertising erectile dysfunction on the television. I mean, stuff you never talked about years ago. But, you know, maybe they've got erectile dysfunction. I don't know, but that's why I call my book Missile Envy. But there's something deep in these men's psyches that propels them to continue with their missiles. And one general said, if you take away our nuclear weapons, he said, man, that's threatening the family jewels. So he said it. He said it.
And on Russia's side,
these people should be removed from office.
On Russia's side, what about them? What's their
incentive? Russians copy and follow you blindly, and they're only a superpower because they can blow you up and destroy the planet. It only takes 1,000 bombs on 100 cities to produce nuclear winter and a huge cloud covering the Earth, a short ice age for 10 years, and we all freeze to death in the dark. 1,000 bombs on 100 cities? You've got Russian America between you have about 4,000 bombs on hair trigger alert. So why do the Russians do it? Because they want to copy you. You're the ones who have to move towards abolition with the Russians, and they'll do it immediately. You are the arrogant ones, and I have to say that very strongly. Arrogant? And you know, this isn't the greatest country on earth, for God's sake. What about Australia? We've got kangaroos. You've got military bases in every country on earth. You have no right to do that. You should get the hell out of the rest of the world and look after yourselves because you're in a mess, and leave us alone.
That's the voice of Dr. Helen Caldicott, of course. She is the great anti-nuclear activist who's been at it now. I remember reading about you during the nuclear freeze days in the early 1980s at about the time you were meeting with Ronald Reagan, as you said. You're listening to Progressive Radio. I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor at The Progressive Magazine. You mentioned in the context of the folly of nuclear weapons a little while ago, the hypocrisy of the United States and Russia, thinking they're the only ones who can have these things. And at the moment here in 2012, the hypocrisy is most obvious as it relates to Iran, because the United States and Israel, which is a hypocrisy unto itself on nuclear weapons,
personified.
Don't want the Iranians to be able even to have a nuclear program that might produce a nuclear bomb. How do you deal with that?
Well, how do you deal with Israel? Third largest nuclear arsenal in the world. With such arrogance, she will neither confirm nor deny that she has them, and we know that she does, and she hasn't signed the non-proliferation treaty. How dare she? And she is sitting there surrounded by, quotes, enemies. Why shouldn't any other country have nuclear weapons if she does? A. B, Iran is within its legal rights to enrich uranium under the non-proliferation treaty. C, there is no evidence, according to your 16 intelligence agencies, that she's making a bomb. D, if Israel drops three nuclear weapons on the two uranium facilities in Nahant and Isfahan, which is possible, according to a study by PSR, in the first 48 hours, it would kill 2.6 million people all the way over to Afghanistan, India and Pakistan, and maybe Israel itself. And yet no one talks about people dying. They talk about policies and this and that, but no one, including the New York Times, and I offered to do an article for them about this, will publish that information.
Well, did they let you do that article?
No. I wrote one for the Sydney Morning Herald, a very short one, quoting that study, 2.6 million people, and then I rang my editor in the Times, and they've commissioned several pieces from me recently on Fukushima, and she said, well, no, you've already published that, we won't do it. But I'm sure there's another reason.
Well, I know one outlet
that might publish it. They're supporting Israel.
You could send it to Progressive. We'd be glad to take a look at it and get it in the magazine.
Okay, I'll do it.
You mentioned Fukushima. You have been writing for decades now about the risk of the nuclear power accidents. What was your instant reaction when you saw what was going on in Fukushima?
The second day after it happened, I just got this incredible sinking feeling in the pit of my stomach. It just hit me that this is irreversible. It's ongoing. It's devastating. And there's nothing we can do about it. Nothing. And it hasn't ended. If Building 4 collapses with a cooling pool of spent fuel on top of it, the Japanese politicians are talking about the fact that they're going to have to evacuate Tokyo, 30 million people. You will be irradiated here in America because the winds blow from east to west usually. And if Building 4 collapses, all the workers who are trying to stabilise the reactors there and there are hydrogen explosions building up, I mean, it could easily happen, they're going to have to evacuate. So the whole complex will be left unmanned. And that means... it just means there will be ongoing hydrogen explosions, releases of the most massive amounts of radiation. And I'm afraid to say that I think it's quite possible this will happen. An earthquake greater than 7 on the Richter scale will decimate Building 4. The cooling pool will collapse, and that scenario I just described will take place.
Speaking with Dr. Helen Caldicott, you're listening to Progressive Radio. The response in Japan and in Germany and in other countries was to move away from nuclear power. Here in the United States, not much of a response.
Well, that's because you're nuts. You started the whole nuclear arms race. You're wedded to the power of the atom. You've got sociopaths running your country, people who are brilliant, with no moral conscience, 1 in 25 are sociopaths. Cheney, Rumsfeld, a lot of people in the Pentagon, no moral conscience. And you've still got a policy to fight and win a nuclear war, which means blowing up the planet and destroying the only life in the universe. I mean, I don't understand this country. Do you?
Well, I've lived here all my life, and I try to get a grip on it. You wrote in your book, If You Love This Planet, about the toxic nature of patriotism and nationalism, and I think that has something to do with it.
Oh, yeah. I think we're still tribalistic. I think we still are troglodytes, really. And after 9/11, I flew in the night before into Eau Claire, Wisconsin, to speak to thousands of university students, and I woke up the next morning, and there they were flying into the World Trade Towers. And as I walked across the campus, someone approached me and said, "Do you believe in Jesus?" And I said, "I'm a pantheist, I think." And she psychologically struck me on the face and said, "You'll go to hell." And I thought, gee, this is really strange. So when the thing happened, I thought, this is a big Christian gig. I got out the Bible and I read to them what Jesus said. Do good to those who hate you. What's the first part of that quote? Something, something. Do good to those who hate you. And I said that to the students, and I hoped that America would not turn to vengeance. I then had to drive across the country in a Greyhound bus 3 days later because there were no planes flying except to get out the Bin Laden family, and they flew them out. You know, I mean, you have to wonder about that. And the whole country was swathed in flags, and all the mum and pop stores said, "God bless America." And I thought, oh, Jesus Christ. And they did. They went into Iraq and killed over 1 million people, half of whom were children. A genocide. They went into Afghanistan. I mean, vengeance. And that's tribalism. Now, it was appropriate when we lived in caves that the men were strong and killed the saber-toothed tigers and the marauding tribes while we breastfed our babies in the caves. That sort of psychological instinct now is totally inappropriate. And it was Einstein who put it best when he said, the most profound thing I've ever read, the splitting of the atom changed everything, all reality, tribalism, save man's, and I stress man's mode of thinking. Thus we drift towards unparalleled catastrophe. That says it.
Speaking with Helen Caldicott, how do we overcome this tribalism?
Well, I'm going to write a book called Why Men Kill and Why Women Let Them and try and analyse from a generic perspective what it is about the human race that we've got to stop killing. We've got to stop killing. We've got to stop glorifying war. Why is there a killer on a horse in every square in Europe? Why does Napoleon have a tomb in Paris and he killed thousands or hundreds of thousands of people in the name of France? Why do we glorify killers? What is this about? How pathetic. And it really is truly so that if we don't stop killing each other, we're going to destroy life on the planet. And I once asked Carl Sagan, I said, "Do you think there's any other life in the universe?" And he paused and he said, "No." And I said, "Why?" He said, "Because if there was another existence and they'd reached our stage of development, they would have destroyed themselves." Hmm. So therefore, are we an evolutionary aberrant?
Or is the last stage of evolution destruction? That's what he was getting at, I
think. Correct.
That's a nice thought.
It's realistic, though. I mean, we have to face the truth.
I'm for facing the truth. I wanted to explore with you, Helen Colicott, this split you have between your interpretation of men and your interpretation of women.
That's not a split.
Well, you seem to you have this view that women are naturally more peaceful.
Yeah, there's been a lot of work done recently on hormone receptors in the brain and the influence upon behavior. So there was a woman who had a lab in California recently, and she noticed when there was an altercation in the lab, the men would go into their room, slam the door and fume. And the women would come in the next morning and clean the benches, make the coffee and, you know, get into conflict resolution. She thought, that's interesting. So she did hormones. The men's testosterone, of course, went sky high. And we know when we give women testosterone, for instance, if they've got breast cancer or something, they get hairy, they get aggressive, they get very sexual too. I mean, my daughter's a doctor. She gave a woman testosterone the other day because her libido was declining because of menopause. And the woman came in and said, I've never experienced this sort of energy before and this sexual energy. So the men's testosterone went up and the women's oxytocin went up. Now, I was taught in medical school, oxytocin is secreted during pregnancy and parturition when we have babies. But in fact, it's a very nurturing hormone and influences behavior. So we've got this, and we've got bigger corpus callosums than men. In other words, a very much bigger connection between right and left brain, which is very important. And women tend to be wimpish. We let the men do what they want. We looked after the men and we don't step up to the plate and take over and say, now, look, you need your bottom smacked. You're about to destroy the planet and we're taking over. In fact, the woman that got the Nobel Prize last year in Africa, I think Liberia, the men were killing each other all the time and civilians. And she organized the women to stop having sex with the men, like Lysistrata. And it worked. They stopped killing each other. But then I suppose when they stop killing the men, the women sleep with the men again, I suppose they start killing again. So I want to examine all these dynamics, and Jung, man and his symbols, the subliminal symbols. And I want to look at the church, the Catholic Church and the Muslims, and how many people have been killed in the name of God in the last century. And what's it all about, you know? And I don't, I mean, I want to examine the cause of the nuclear pathology infecting the planet.
And how do you think we get over that pathology?
Well, I don't know if we can, but certainly when I address an audience and talk about this, the men get all petulant and rise up as if I've attacked them. And I say, sit down, man. This isn't about you. This is generic, this problem. And a woman will stand up to protect the man. And I say, sit down, woman. He can look after himself. We've got to examine why this happens. What's the etiology? What's the pathology? And I know it arouses tremendous feelings. And I hope to create critical thinking, debate, analysis, and at least, I don't know if it'll do any good, but we did stop slavery. Women did get the vote. I mean, I think we are capable of change and psychological maturation and growth.
I should hope so. I'm speaking with Dr. Helen Colicott, anti-nuclear activist, founder of Physicians for Social Responsibility. She has a radio show on Pacifica, some stations, called If You Love This Planet. Her book is If You Love This Planet, which came out 11 or 12 years ago and has been revised a couple years ago. In that book, we only have about 5 minutes left, so I wanted to pick up something in the book telling people, in a way, what they can do on a personal level. And let's start there. I mean, you talk about loving nature as a start, for instance.
Yeah, well, you know, you've got lovely nature here. And I walked to Picnic Point the other day and it was so beautiful.
I go bird watching there every spring.
Yeah, so. And the birds. And when you commune with nature, that's when I know what I have to do. After my husband left me on my 50th birthday, I was so devastated. And I ran around to all my friends saying, what am I going to do? And they didn't give me any answers. And once I was in my garden, about 2 years after, and suddenly, and the birds were singing and I was planting my flowers, suddenly I got it. You're born alone and you'll die alone. And when I realized that, I suddenly became strong and I could cope. So you get your intuitive flashes when you're in nature. Also, education is a key. Jefferson said an informed democracy will behave in a responsible fashion. We scientists have left the public so far behind. People don't understand science. It's up to us now, doctors in particular, but all scientists, to get out and say, do you know what we've done? We've handed these secrets over to corporations and they're screwing up the planet with global warming and toxic pollution, deforestation, the whole thing. We're going to teach you to help you to learn how to fix it.
There are always some scientists and maybe some doctors who are in the denial, global warming denial or tobacco
cancer. No, they're not scientists. They're shills employed by the tobacco companies, you know. And they learned that doubt is the best propaganda mechanism, and they're doing the same. Exxon is spending hundreds of millions of dollars setting up, you know, bogus think tanks in Washington, staffed all by the same people saying there's doubt. There's no doubt. There is no doubt about global warming. How dare they do that? How dare the tobacco companies create doubt about smoking? I knew in 56 when I entered medical school I mustn't smoke because it caused cancer. But nuclear power's much worse because it's going to kill people for the rest of time with cancer. Tobacco only kills the smoker.
And yet, you know, if you had that meeting you wanted to have with Obama one-on-one on nuclear power?
I reckon I'd turn him around. I'm sure I would.
Well, he would say, you know, there's safe nuclear energy. No, look at France.
No, he wouldn't say that after I got to him. Because I'd established a doctor-patient relationship. And, you know, he's got humility and he's intelligent. So am I. And I would teach him medicine. He could teach me a bit of law if he wants.
And once we eliminated nuclear weapons and got off of the nuclear power drip, we would still have a ways to go, though. What would be your next issue?
No, I've got a study called carbon-free, nuclear-free. Within about 30 years, you could have all the energy you need by conservation and renewables. They're all here. They're cheap as hell. A reactor costs $12 billion to build. Spend your money on saving the planet, not on destroying it. So, you know, we can abolish weapons. You can close down your 104 reactors. Japan just has. Germany will soon. And we can stop global warming, close down all the coal fire plants. We can fix it.
And ban
otherwise,
SUVs,
I wouldn't be out here. Yeah.
I like your idea about banning SUVs. You can drive down any highway in the U.S. and still, I think, one out of every two or three cars is an SUV.
They're disgusting. They're absolutely disgusting. I once asked a man at GM, why the hell are you making these things? He looked at me straight in the face with eyes like dead stones and said, we're making money out of it. And I thought, you're going to kill the planet for money? That's about right, isn't it?
Well, that's what they've been doing.
Is money really God here? People say they're Christians, but they're not really. They're into money. What did Jesus was? A socialist. He said, and he was Jewish. And he said, leave your goods and follow me.
Well, people are...
That's what it fascinates
people
me.
People are clinging to their goods and praying to the golden calves. So that's where we are, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're out of time, but I wanted to thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you, Matthew. It's been fun.
A lot of fun, and... I wanted to recommend to the listener that if you've been enjoying this program and want to hear more about what Helen Caldicott has to say, one good place to start is to pick up her book, If You Love This Planet, especially the updated version.
And to listen to my radio show, ifyoulovethisplanet.org.
Which you can find on a lot of Pacifica stations and on the web. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Matthew.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.